relationship with this sex offender, that he will do anything to distract attention, and that these bombings of the boats are a way to prod Venezuela and perhaps even Cuba, a close ally of Venezuela, to attack back, which would then, of course, divert all attention to what's happening in Latin America and the U.S. relationship. Your response?
It could be the case. It wouldn't be the first time in the history of the United States when something like this occurs. And we do understand, as I said at the beginning, that the current military presence in the Southern Caribbean is totally unjustified. It's extravagant and it's extraordinary, and it's threatening to the people of the region.
I want to thank you for being with us. Carlos Fernandez de Cossío is Cuba's deputy foreign minister. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feldstein, Augusta Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Nicole Salazar, Sarah Nasser, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Hani Masood, and Safwat Nizal. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, Hugh Grant, Karl Marxer, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, Dennis McCormick. This is Democracy Now! I'll be traveling through the country. Check our website at democracynow.org. Thank you.
KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website, KBOO.FM. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at KBOO.FM. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
I'm Don Jacobson, one of the hosts of Moving On, here every Friday right after the noon news. Moving On isn't the only place to hear folk music on KBOO. Every weekday from 5:30 to 7 a.m., a different host brings you for a variety of folk music, and bluegrass is on Saturdays from 9 a.m. till noon. This music exists not to make gazillionaires, but it is music that comes from the heart and the head for the enrichment and entertainment of the listeners. With federal funding for public broadcasting in the crosshairs, please step up and support this vital community institution. Go to kboo.fm/give, text to KBOO 44321, or click on donate on your mobile app. Your generosity is greatly appreciated.
This is Ann Feeney, and you are listening to listener-supported community radio, KBOO FM in Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Multnomah County will open a new family shelter, motel shelter, in Gresham.
Kaiser nurses authorize a strike.
And new rules will keep future Oregon Lottery winners unanimous.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, September 26th, 2025. I'm Dave Johnson.
And I'm Dejon. Multnomah County will open a new family motel shelter in Gresham later this year. At a board meeting on Thursday, commissioners unanimously approved a lease agreement with the motel to provide shelter for families along with wraparound services. There will be 53 total units. Anna Plum is the interim director of the Homeless Services Department. She presented the lease agreement to the commissioners on Thursday.
We are here to ask for your vote to approve a room block agreement for a motel shelter in East County, specifically in Gresham. So I'm going to start with some background on what we mean by a room block agreement. Some of you may know this, but we do like to make sure for the public people understand what we're talking about. A room block agreement is a set block of hotel rooms that we lease as Multnomah County. Sometimes it's a few rooms and sometimes it's a whole motel. In this case, we are asking to lease the entire motel. In this relationship, Multnomah County leases those rooms and we pay for those rooms for a period of time. The motel owner maintains the property and insures the property, and then we partner with a service provider who provides 24/7 motel sheltering services on that property when we own the whole motel. So why motel shelter? We've come before you about motel shelter. Motel shelter is one of the tools that we use to help folks in the community, and there's several benefits to motel shelter. For one, they're relatively quick to get going once you have that lease in place. The furnishings are there, the amenities are there, so we can pretty much get going pretty quickly, and there is little to no capital development. Sometimes we might add ADA bars and a couple showers or something, but for the most part, folks can move right in. And maintenance and housekeeping is included in the room rental price. So neither the county nor the provider has to worry about maintaining the property or keeping rooms clean. That is something that is a part of the lease that we pay for, which is really helpful to both us and that provider. I do also want to talk about motels as a really trauma-informed option. People have a door they can close. They have a private space that they can be. This is particularly wonderful for families. Kids can close the door and do their homework. A parent who had to work all day can get some good rest at night so they can go to work the next day and be well rested. They have a place they can be together as a family. If a child is sick, they have a bed they can sleep in. It's just a really wonderful place to have as a family who is experiencing instability and needs a safe place to be. It also does better protect the health and safety of the family. In the event that they are ill, they can stay in that room and get better, but it also protects the other folks who are in that property from being around someone who might be contagious. In this case, and in almost all of the cases of the motels that we rent, each room does have a separate heat and AC unit as well that can be repaired if that one goes down, but it doesn't affect the rest of the rooms on the property so that people have climate control in the room. That becomes really important in the summer and the winter, and it's really nice to have that option for our families.
Plum says the motel is in great condition and has a lot of ADA accessible spaces. County officials say maintaining family shelter in East Multnomah County is important. Data from 211 Info shows 20% of the people on the family shelter wait list in 2023 requested Gresham as their shelter location. The county's lease will last for 10 years with an option to exit the lease each year. And Multnomah County could sign a lease as soon as October 1st with a shelter opening later this year.
Multnomah County Sheriff's Office has arrested the murder suspect they mistakenly released on bail earlier this week. 26-year-old Ty Sage posted bail and was released from custody on Monday. That was a mistake, according to the Sheriff's Office, Nicole Marissi O'Donnell. Sage is facing a second-degree murder charge in connection with the shooting death of 15-year-old Logan Ivy in December of 2021. Marissi O'Donnell said, quote, "Ty Sage should never have been able to post bail. To the family of Logan Ivy, the young man killed, I want to acknowledge the fear and trauma that this mistaken release has caused," end quote. The sheriff's office says it acted in good faith based on the information available to them. However, in this case, they say Sage should not have been eligible to post bail. Sage was arrested on Thursday afternoon off Highway 101 in Florence, Oregon.
Nearly 4,000 healthcare workers at Kaiser Permanente locations in Oregon and Southwest Washington have voted overwhelmingly to authorize a strike, which could begin any time after September 3rd. The Oregon Federation of Nurses and Healthcare Professionals says it's concerned about fair pay and safe staffing levels are not being met. Isabel Charlie has more.
Nurses and other health professionals at Kaiser Permanente facilities throughout Oregon and Southwest Washington have voted overwhelmingly to authorize a strike. Oregon Federation of Nurses and Health Professionals represents nearly 4,000 healthcare workers, including nurses, lab professionals, and therapists. Union President Serena Rohr says their working conditions are their patients' healing conditions, and the union is fighting for both to be the best they can be.
And that means you have to pay people well. That means you have to have safe working environments. That means you have to listen to the people who actually know how to care for the patients.
A strike could begin any time after September 30th. Rohr says the bargaining team is meeting with Kaiser as much as possible and hopes to reach a deal before then. In a statement, Kaiser, which is one of the nation's largest nonprofit healthcare providers, called the strike authorization disappointing. They added that Kaiser facilities meet and often exceed legal nurse-to-patient ratios. Rohr says Kaiser workers are going without eating or bathroom breaks for hours because of a lack of staffing. Because of the condition, she says workers are concerned that Kaiser is not able to attract and retain skilled staff.
We are Kaiser. Kaiser functions because we do. I want us to be able to get back to that, and that's what we're pushing for. Mission over margin. Period.
The Oregon Union is part of a national alliance of Kaiser unions, 46,000 of whose members have now authorized strikes in six states. Kaiser Permanente workers first unionized 40 years ago. For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet.
Starting on Saturday, a new law will require the winners of the Oregon lottery to remain anonymous. Lawmakers passed Oregon House Bill 3115 this session. Prior to its passage, the name and address of a winner was public record. Now, that information will be kept anonymous unless the winner wants their name out there. The Oregon lottery can still say where a winning ticket was purchased, the amount, and the game. The new law also bans buying or selling winning lottery tickets, aimed at a growing trend of selling to so-called discounters. Discounters will buy winning tickets for less than they're worth and cash them in for the prize. For some, that's to avoid having to drive to a lottery payment center. For others, it's to avoid having their prize garnished for outstanding child support or other similar issues. New rules say lottery officials can now check if the tickets were bought or sold before being cashed in. If they were, the prize claim can be denied.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spoke at the United Nations today. He told world leaders that Israel, quote, must finish the job, end quote, against Hamas in Gaza. Dozens of delegates from multiple nations walked out of the UN General Assembly hall as he began. Netanyahu criticized other countries' recent decisions to recognize Palestinian statehood. He added, quote, your disgraceful decision will encourage terrorism against Jews and against innocent people everywhere, end quote. Netanyahu routinely accuses his critics of anti-Semitism. Back in the Middle East, the Israeli military set up loudspeakers at the Israel-Gaza border to blast the prime minister's speech into the territory. And in an unprecedented move, Netanyahu said the Israeli military, the Israeli army would take over the mobile phones of Palestinians living in Gaza and Hamas operatives and broadcast his speech live through those devices. Netanyahu's annual speech to the UN General Assembly has been protested before. The European Union is considering tariffs and sanctions on Israel. The Assembly just passed a non-binding resolution urging Israel to commit to an independent Palestinian nation, which Netanyahu has said is a non-starter. The International Criminal Court has issued an arrest warrant accusing Netanyahu of crimes against humanity, which he denies. The 2023 attack by Hamas militants killed about 1,200 people in Israel and took 251 hostage. Israel's military response killed more than 65,000 Palestinians in Gaza and displaced 90% of its population. Although more than 150 countries now recognize a Palestinian state, the United States has not. Trump says yesterday he would not let Israel annex the occupied West Bank, a move Israel never announced. Israeli officials recently approved a controversial settlement project that would effectively cut the West Bank in two, a move that opponents would prevent the chances for a Palestinian state. Netanyahu's speech was preceded by Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas, who addressed the General Assembly via video since the U.S. denied him a visa. He said the world needs to do more to make statehood happen. He said, quote, "The time has come for the international community to do right by the Palestinian people," end quote.
Healthcare cuts remain central to the ongoing federal budget stalemate. The Dallas sniper acted alone and used ICE agents' tracking apps. And former FBI Director James Comey is indicted for obstruction of justice and making false statements. With those stories and more, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
It increased the child tax credit. It meant that we're going to increase take-home pay by about $10,000 over the 4 years of the Trump administration. It means that if you're working on tips or if you're working an overtime shift, the government is going to take less of your money.
At a North Carolina rally, Vice President J.D. Vance outlines the benefits of the One Big Beautiful Bill, including a big increase in a child tax credit for millions of families. But highly unpopular megabill cuts are expected to mean more than 10 million people will lose Medicaid and children's health insurance by 2034. Those cuts and Democratic demands to extend ACA insurance plan subsidies are central to now stalled negotiations over the federal budget. Brett Woodhouse with the nonprofit Protect Our Care says these Obamacare subsidies were massively successful, and if they expire, millions of people are in for health insurance sticker shock.
During the Biden administration, when he left office, we had the lowest uninsured rate this country has ever seen. So we have more people having American health care, more people having coverage, more people sharing the risk, a healthier population. That's in everyone's benefit.
Republican leaders say they want to continue current funding levels with a temporary stopgap and come back later to address the cost of insurance. Critics argue that would let premiums spike. If a deal isn't reached by midnight Monday, the government starts to shut down. Instead of the typical employee furloughs, the Trump administration is ordering agencies to consider permanent mass layoffs. Meanwhile, the sniper who fired at an ICE detention center in Dallas was targeting agents, not detainees, according to notes he left behind. Authorities confirmed 29-year-old Joshua John of Dallas killed an ICE detainee and critically wounded two others. Marcos Charles with Immigration and Customs Enforcement says he did so by using an app that tracks ICE agents to help migrants avoid detention.
It's a casting call to invite bad actors to attack law enforcement officers. It's no different than giving a hitman the location of their intended target, and this is exactly what we saw happen in Dallas.
Former FBI Director James Comey is being indicted on charges of giving false statements and obstruction of justice relating to the investigation into whether President Donald Trump's first campaign colluded with Russia to win the 2016 election. Though Attorney General Pam Bondi says the indictment reflects that no one is above the law, she initially doubted the case's merits. Trump specifically told Bondi to ensure Comey is charged.
Comey's a bad person. He's a sick person. I think he's a sick guy, actually. He did terrible things at the FBI.
The Department of Justice is also pressing prosecutors to investigate the foundation of wealthy civil society donor George Soros, a regular target of right-wing conspiracy theories. A department memo lists potential charges, including arson and material support of terrorism. A new report finds Massachusetts is home to some of the most censored campuses in the nation. The latest college free speech rankings give schools like Harvard and Boston University failing grades for free speech. This comes as student protests over the war in Gaza led the Trump administration to withhold funding, and the death of conservative activist Charlie Kirk ignited debates over the limits of free speech. Sean Stevens with the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, or FIRE, says conservative students are increasingly joining their liberal peers in supporting censorship.
We're siloing ourselves, and it's not just at the college level. We're siloing ourselves society-wide in these kind of political camps.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines for with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali, then at 7, Once Upon a Time. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with an overnight low of 47. Tomorrow's weather will be partly sunny with a high of 76 degrees. Today in history, in 1905, Albert Einstein publishes the third of his Annus Mirabilis papers, introducing the special theory of relativity. The quote of the day is from American tennis player Serena Williams, born this day in 1981. She said, quote, "Luck has nothing to do with it because I have spent many, many hours, countless hours on the court, working for my one moment in time, not knowing when it would come," end quote.
The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services will send extra public health workers to Indian health service facilities, which have been seriously understaffed. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services announced more than 70 public health officers are being deployed to Indian health service facilities across the country. IHS has faced staffing shortages serving Native Americans and Alaska Natives. Reporter Carol Ann Duro has more.
In a request for comment, Indian Health Service Chief Medical Officer Dr. Loretta Christensen shared that nurses, providers, pharmacists, social workers, lab medical technologists, and engineers would be filling shortages at their facilities. When asked about their preparedness, Dr. Christensen responded that all officers would be receiving orientation upon arrival. Abigail Echohawk, director of the Urban Indian Health Institute, provides insight on their training.
There has been a consistent gap at IHS in providing culturally based onboarding and education for individuals who are new to Indian countries.
However, Echohawk shares that there is progress being made. After the IHS visited her organization, Seattle Indian Health Board, to observe their cultural onboarding system. RFK Jr., Secretary of Health and Human Services, says this is a part of their initiative to make America healthy again, which Echohawk says has been lacking.
Indian country has been just responding to the immediate changes that have been made across HHS.
Deployments of the public officers will be assigned equally across northern and southern IHS facilities. For National Native News, I'm Carol Ann Duro.
A Tlingit master weaver is using viral monster dolls called Labubus to bring attention to Chilkat and Raven's Tail weaving. KTOO's Yvonne Crumray saw the regalia-clad dolls herself and has more.
In Lily Hope's shop in downtown Juneau, she holds up a tiny doll with an evil grin.
Some people are like, why? Oh, please, no. Why? What an ugly monster. And other people are like, oh, please let me have one.
Her shop is filled with pieces of weaving, earrings, formline robes, and pictures of models in more weaving. On her desk lies a green doll wearing a Raven's Tail headdress, woven in pink, white, and blue yarn.
This one is Trans Pride, requested from an art collector in New York City.
Hope is a master weaver. She dedicated her life to reviving Chilkat and Raven's Tail weaving. And through apprenticeships and classes, she's helped hundreds of Alaska Native people form their own weaving practice. She's also a mom of five. And those two worlds collided when her kids started asking for Labubus.
My three small children introduced me to the dolls and said, please, mommy, buy these for us.
You may have heard of them. The dolls are all over the internet with their fuzzy bodies, big, colorful eyes, and pointy teeth. They're based on storybook characters. Hope says they come in blind boxes, generic packaging that leaves the contents a mystery. So part of the fun is finding which Labubu is in the box.
Oh, yes, this is the whole rage, right? It's like, oh, I got lychee berry. Oh, I got the green grape. Oh, now we need to get soy milk, Mama. Let's get soy milk.
But in the craze, she saw an opportunity to continue to push Northwest Coast weaving into the spotlight.
When somebody sees an indigenized Labubu in a Raven's Tail regalia, they can be like, oh, where does that come from? Oh, what are those? Oh, what is Raven's Tail weaving? It's related to Chilkat? Let's go.
Hope's doll-sized regalia sets go for more than $600, and fine arts collectors all over the country are ordering them. But for those who don't want to shell out that much, Hope also sells kits so people can weave their own outfits for a doll.
It's a way to get the work further into the world and kind of, you know, capture some people who wouldn't necessarily come to Raven's Tail weaving otherwise, but are like, oh, this is a way that I can dress my Labubu in traditional regalia, and I made it myself? That's huge.
It's a way of weaving your own story into the trend. And the little monsters look pretty cool, too. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cremery.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A utility shutoff can trigger a family crisis. Food spoils, health threats rise, eviction risk looms. And with energy costs rising, more people could face gas or electricity shutoffs. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. As energy costs grow, many families are struggling with utility debt and at risk of shutoffs.
In 2024, we had 350,000 Pennsylvania households experience an involuntary termination of their gas or electric service.
Elizabeth Marks of the nonprofit Pennsylvania Utility Law Project says shutoffs can trigger a downward spiral. Without refrigeration, people's food may spoil. Without air conditioning, they may be vulnerable to extreme heat, and they may even risk eviction.
You may be in violation of your lease if your electric and gas is shut off.
Most states have shut off moratoriums in winter that prevent utilities from cutting off service during cold weather. But fewer than half of states have summer shutoff protections. And seasonal moratoriums may not help people whose service was already shut off earlier in the year. So Mark says a range of solutions are needed, from energy efficiency improvements that help reduce people's energy use in the first place, to more payment plan options for people to catch up on debt.
We need to overhaul the utility collection and termination rules to make sure that terminations are, if used at all, an extreme last resort.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
The incarceration rate for women in Idaho is higher than any country in the world. According to a new report, drug offenses largely drive the state's higher numbers for women in jails and prisons. Eric Tegetoff has more.
Idaho incarcerates women at a higher rate than any country in the world, and at the third highest rate among the states. That's according to a report from the Prison Policy Initiative, which says Idaho trails only South Dakota and Montana in locking women up. At 277 women in prison per 100,000 population, the state even edges out El Salvador. A study out this year from the Idaho Justice Project found 62% of women in prison at the end of 2021 were there because of drug offenses. Wanda Bertram with the Prison Policy Initiative says this is a major driver of women's incarceration.
Even as the overall U.S. incarceration rate has been declining over the last 10 years, women's incarceration rates have stayed high. We know that the war on drugs plays a huge role in that. And it's states like Idaho that are not backing down from punitive responses to drug use that are seeing these higher rates.
Idaho lawmakers have funded a new women's prison facility in the state near Kuna. The Prison Policy Initiative report examines all forms of incarceration, including prisons, local and tribal jails, immigrant detention, and youth incarceration. Bertram says locking people up for drug offenses doesn't actually help with substance abuse. She says supporting community resources is the most important solution for addiction.
The expansion of healthcare to allow people who are struggling with drug use to get services in the community, because this is not a problem that you can punish away.
The report notes that the number of women in prison worldwide has increased nearly 60% in the past quarter century. The U.S. is a big driver of this increase. Although only 4% of the world's women and girls live in the U.S., the nation is home to 1 in 4 of the world's incarcerated girls and women. For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedov.
Iowa lawmakers defeated a measure this year that would have given pesticide makers immunity from accountability for their products that may cause cancer. Now, supporters of a so-called Cancer Gag Act are taking their efforts to Washington, D.C. Mark Marin reports.
Iowa advocates for healthy farming practices are pushing back on a federal move to give pesticide companies immunity from products that may cause cancer. Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement sent a letter signed by more than 400 Iowans to Washington lawmakers, calling on them to oppose the so-called Cancer Gag Act, which would allow makers of glyphosate-based chemicals to sidestep immunity if it is determined they cause cancer. Ava Allen Ryan, CCI's Farm and Environment Organizing Director, calls this a common-sense issue. She says the fact that this is even a debate leaves Iowans wondering who lawmakers are actually representing.
So are they working for Iowans and their constituents, or are they working for multinational chemical manufacturers like Bayer?
The Environmental Protection Agency says glyphosate poses no risks to human health when used in accordance with its current label. Similar to the Iowa bill that was defeated, federal legislation would bar people from taking legal action if they get sick from glyphosate, Alan Ryan says if there's even a chance that ag chemicals could cause cancer or other illnesses, Iowans should have a right to take legal action.
And it's very clear that Iowans want to preserve that right to pursue a lawsuit, and that decision about whether or not a case has merit should be left up to the judges, not a blanket decision made by elected officials to take away that right.
Following a grassroots organizing campaign, Iowa lawmakers defeated a state-level version of the Cancer Gag Act this year. I'm Mark Moran for Iowa News Service.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, September 26th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, the producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Jasmine Moss. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Edwin J. Vieira, Antonia Gonzalez, Eric Tegatoff, and Mark Moran. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Dave Johnson.
And I'm Dejan. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.